Welcome to the 339th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Patrick Winograd. In this edition, our topics are a review of my weekend predictions, a Super Bowl review, probably will be a little bit quick, and our weekly look at the NBA, and of course, college basketball as well. So, starting off, let's jump right in with a look back at my weekend predictions. In the NFL, I went 1-0. That also means that I went, I think it's 13-0. I'm pretty sure it's 13-0. Might be more than that, but undefeated in postseason predictions overall, which is something that I definitely haven't done in any sport, and I'm happy about that for obvious reasons. But then, college basketball, I went 3-1, and in the NBA, I went 2-2, which means that overall, I went 6-3. That brings me to a 14-88 and 9-35 winning percentage. Or sorry, overall record, a 61.4% winning percentage. Of course, obviously, the first number is definitely not a percentage. But going back to the top, obviously, I picked the Seahawks to beat the Patriots. I would have picked them. Honestly, I would have picked the Seahawks over whoever came out of the AFC. I think I went on record multiple times on the podcast to say that the real Super Bowl was going to be Seahawks Rams whenever they played each other. And I stuck to that. I had no reason to go against it. And well, it ended up being right. Then in college basketball, really interesting week of games. Actually, the game that I was going to not include because the spread was too far apart and the win percentage, depending on what analytics site you checked, easily in Duke's favor was Duke North Carolina. I mean, I literally only included that. I will say I'm not normally one to include based on, the numbers or sorry, the names on the jerseys and the team colors and university names. But this time I said, you know what? It's Duke North Carolina. It's a top 15 matchup. You got to include it, even if Duke is favored by 5.5 on the road or wherever it was. Shockingly, that was the one game I got wrong this weekend where I just kind of had a throwaway pick and said, you know what? Duke is going to win this game. I agree with that stance. It was the other games that I got interesting predictions on. I thought, or the other games that I got right, even though I thought that that one was going to be the easy one, the layup, so to speak, and the other three were going to be the tougher ones. But no, I did pick those all right, though. I had Houston going on the road and beating BYU. They were, I think, favored by like 1.5 on the road. They won that game 77 to 66, BYU's fourth straight loss. I had Michigan State beating Illinois to stop their little slide that they had been on. They won 85 to 82 in overtime at home. And then I had St. John's beating number 3 UConn 81-72, which that was, I'll put it this way. When I was looking at the UConn St. John's matchup and the Duke North Carolina matchup, even though UConn tends to have a pretty good presence at MSG, that just felt like a game where St. John's needed to send a message, and UConn was way overdue for a loss. I mean, they've been going to overtime at home with the likes of Villanova. They had a close game with Providence, they were close to Seton Hall. They deserved to lose a long time ago to get to pick up that second loss. And typically that kind of stuff just, obviously there's I don't think there's any like statistical backing of the being quote unquote due to lose or to win a game. But the reality is at some point, there's a reason why there hasn't been an undefeated team since Indiana and whatever that was 1976 or I think that's the right year, maybe 75. But the 70s, there's a reason. It's just tough to not lose a game in an entire season. And I think, well, we'll get to it later, but unless Miami of Ohio goes undefeated and wins the title, we're not going to have an undefeated team this year. So interesting to say that, but I'm just saying that UConn for sure felt like the level they had been playing at, they were due for a loss, whereas Duke just felt like they were just better than the ACC that's around them. And frankly, St. John's, better than most of the rest of the pack in the Big East, too. And UConn had already been not struggling, but playing pretty close against some of the middle of the pack teams. So that one felt a little bit obvious to me, but I got that right. And of course, again, only got the Duke game wrong, as North Carolina won that one on Seth Trimble buzzer beater three. And then in the NBA, I went 2-2. I correctly picked the Pistons to beat the Knicks. I correctly picked the Lakers to beat the Warriors. And then I was incorrect when the Rockets beat the Thunder. I think the Thunder have not won a single game this season when I picked them to win, which is incredibly ironic because I've only picked them maybe 4 or 5 times, and they've only lost like 13 or 14 times, I think, at this point. And then you have the 76ers who beat the Suns 109 to 103. Got that one wrong as well. But overall, pretty happy with my weekend predictions. As I said before, pretty good record. No more NFL football, obviously. It'll just be basketball for the foreseeable future. And then I guess maybe some baseball once we get into that season, but we'll see what I decided to do with that. I don't think I actually did baseball predictions throughout the summer because they're a little bit odd. They're kind of just 50-50s. It's really hard to pick more than an individual game and pick the whole series. And it's kind of odd to just pick a game in baseball. So, yeah, weird sport to predict. But we'll see what happens with that. For now, though, let's move on to the Super Bowl. As we all know by now, the Seahawks defeated the Patriots 29-13 in Super Bowl 60. That score is extremely inflated. The reality is that during the end of the third quarter, this game was 12-0. And that's much more indicative of what actually happened in this game than the final score. New England was the first team ever to get shut out in the first half. Very big deal there. And obviously, on the other end of things, the Seahawks just ran the ball, flipped field position, however many times they could possibly do that, and just kicked field goal after field goal. And it worked. I mean, look, the Patriots really only got anything going downfield when the game was effectively over already, and they started to just push the ball down the field out of necessity. Drake May's ending stats were 27 of 43 for 295, two touchdowns, two interceptions. But that is a, I mean, I don't know how to, I guess the word I would use is just it's a glorious misrepresentation of how he played in this game. He was not good at all. I would lean towards the QBR of 16.3 to say that's probably a more accurate representation of how he actually played in this game. Wasn't helped by his running game being completely ineffective. They only averaged 4.4 yards on the ground, and that included a 16-yard scramble from him, which out of their 79 yards was honestly a non-inconsequential part of it. Meanwhile, Seattle, Kenneth Walker had 5 yards per carry. He just kept running all over the place on New England, and they got the production they needed. I mean, Jaxon Smith-Njigba did not have a signature performance or anything like that. Really, Sam Darnold didn't have an amazing game, but he managed it, and you know, this is what this team is built off of. Sam Darnold doesn't have to be as good as Matthew Stafford. Or even Drake May in previous games. He does not have to be as good as Jordan Love had to be at times for the Packers this year. As good as Joe Burrow always has to be for the Bengals to win a single game. He doesn't have to be Josh Allen. This team is built off the defense, and we know that. I think they just dominated the game. I mean, there's really no way around it. I mean, when we were, you know, when people were talking about who's going to be Super Bowl MVP, Jason Myers wasn't even an incorrect assumption there, and really, you could give it to someone on the defense, but it wasn't one particular person. I mean, this was multiple guys with multiple sacks. There were multiple forced, well, I guess they changed one forced fumble to an interception, but two interceptions in the game, including the pick six by Uchenna Nwosu that was, in essence, a forced fumble. But look, I mean, this game just it was dominated by the Seahawks defense, which I don't think I expected them to take over the game to this level. I think, I mean, I picked them to win for a reason. I obviously expected their defense to be superior, and the fact of the matter is, the Patriots' offense hadn't been that great. Drake May's record-setting postseason in any stretch of the imagination was only tying Joe Burrow's records for getting sacked in a postseason, which of course resulted in the Bengals losing to the Rams in that Super Bowl. They really just couldn't get anything going offensively, and it wasn't. Again, it wasn't completely unpredictable, but I think that the Seahawks were, I'll put it this way, I didn't think they were going to get a shutout in the first half, and I didn't think that the Patriots wouldn't even be able to get into field goal range until the end of the game, just throwing it up deep and hoping that something happens because there's just no time to do anything else. So just a dominant performance by the Seahawks, and obviously they're looking very, very good as we head into next year as well because Sam Darnold's still under contract, and really, not that many things up in the air for them at all, actually. So, they're going to be great again next year. I think the Seahawks and the Rams opened up as co-favorites or close to that, for the Super Bowl next year, which isn't surprising based on this year and based on Stafford announcing that he's coming back again. You expect the Rams to retool on defense, and keep everything else pretty much the same. So that's going to be the story going into next year. But for now, Seattle, just an amazing dominant defense takes over the Super Bowl and gets them the victory. And we can now move on to a quick recap of the last week of action in the NBA. where the Pistons are currently on top of the standings. They are 39-13. They're now not even far behind Oklahoma City for the best record in the league, which I'll get to in a second. But they're 7-3 in their last 10. The Knicks are 34-19. Pretty good winning percentage for them as well, just 5.5 back of the Pistons and 9-1 in their last 10. Meanwhile, the Celtics also 34-19. So they're tied for that two spot currently. Then you have the Cavs. They are 33-21. They're a game and a half behind the Celtics and the Knicks. They are 9-1 in their last 10, including winning their last four. The Raptors are a game behind the Cavs at 32-22. They are 8 games back overall, 1 game behind Cleveland, with 7-3 mark in their last 10 games. Then you have the 76ers, who are 30-23, 1.5 behind the Raptors. The Magic, who have won 3 in a row to get to 28-24, which puts them 1.5 behind the Sixers and 1.5 ahead of the Miami Heat, who are at 28-27. They are 2 games ahead of the Hawks, who are 26-29, and the Hawks are just 1/2 of a game ahead of the Charlotte Hornets, who won 9 in a row, and then obviously last night lost to the Pistons, as we all eventually came to see after, or maybe saw in the box score after seeing what happened with, of course, the big fight there in that game. But the Charlotte Hornets did, in fact, win 9 games in a row before that, which of course means they're 9-1 in their last 10 games, and they're currently in the play-in spot, the last play-in spot, replacing the Chicago Bulls, who are 24-30 and have lost 5 games in a row, just 2-8 in their last 10. So things going downhill for the Bulls, which honestly is to be expected when you look at that roster. It is not in great shape, and had, I would call it, let's just say, a lack of direction at the trade deadline, I think is probably the easiest way to explain that. But then you have the Bucks. They're a game and a half behind Chicago at 21-30. Obviously, still ended up with Giannis post trade deadline, which has drawn some interesting commentary from both sides there. But then you have the Nets. They are 15-37. They are way out of the picture. They're 6.5 games behind the Bucks. The Wizards at 14-38, despite their new nucleus of Anthony Davis and Trae Young. Of course, this is our first edition post trade deadline. It was a pretty interesting trade deadline this year. Obviously, I didn't even mention it, but the Cavs have James Harden now, swapped him with Darius Garland. So that was an interesting trade as well. But I think the real news of the trade deadline was Giannis not getting traded at all. And then obviously the Wizards making interesting moves just all over the board. You have the Pacers, who are 13-40. They are in last place. They have lost 4 games in a row, last in the East. But not the worst overall, and we'll get to that in a second. But starting at the top of the West, you have the Thunder, 41-13, so 2 games ahead in the win column of the Pistons, but same in the loss column now. They are just 5-5 in their last 10, so have definitely come down to earth, not anywhere close to setting the wins record, although they still might get the one seed. I mean, we're way over the halfway mark of the season, and they're still up here with a 4-game lead, so pretty likely that they'll get that one seed, but not going to be in record-setting fashion like it looked like it might be towards the beginning of the season. Then you have the Spurs. They're 36-16. They're 4 games behind the Thunder. They are 7-3 in their last 10. They have won 4 in a row, separating them from the Nuggets, who are just 5-5 in their last 10, but they're still 34-20 overall in the third seed. Then again, we are back to the 3 through 6 alternating between half games separating all of these teams. The Rockets are a half game behind the Nuggets at 32-19. The Lakers are a half game behind the Rockets at 32-20, and then the Timberwolves are a half game behind the Lakers at 33-22. All three of those teams, 6-4 in their last 10, and no streak winning or losing either way. And then you have the Suns. They're a game back of the Timberwolves in the seventh seed. Currently, they're 31-22 overall, 5-5 in their last 10. The Warriors are 29-25. They're 2.5 behind the Suns, but they're 3 games ahead of the Trailblazers and the Clippers, who are tied for the final two play-in spots. The Blazers at 26-28, and the Clippers at 25-27. Of course, as I said, getting Darius Garland in that trade with the Cavs. Should mention, Lakers didn't do really anything notable. Really, none of the top five did anything crazy at the trade deadline. Nothing, honestly, just nothing crazy at all. Obviously, the Warriors, though, making a move for Kristaps Porzingis was probably the most surprising thing that any team did, just based on the direction this team is going in. Not really quite sure that fixes any of their problems, but they made the trade anyway. And then, of course, the Clippers made the trade that I said. The Grizzlies had some interesting swapping action. They gave up Jaren Jackson, a couple other pieces. I think he was definitely the blockbuster guy in that trade. But traded him away to Utah. The Mavericks, meanwhile, obviously traded away AD. They're 19-33. Both of these teams way far out of the playoff picture. I think the 10 that are in are pretty much, I mean, those are the 10 teams that are going to make the playoffs. I don't think Memphis can do anything with their roster. I don't really believe in Dallas or Utah either, especially because they're at least 5 games out, each of them. So, yeah, not really expecting anything to change, although I guess good for the Blazers that they claim that 10th spot that was really up for grabs when you consider what the bottom of the West looks like. Then behind the Mavs, you have the Jazz at 17-37, the Pelicans at 15-40, and finally the Kings at 12-43. The Kings have now lost 13 games in a row because they lost, of course, the game of the year, the game of the century, the battle, a Royal Rumble 330,000, whatever you want to call it, between the Kings and the Pelicans that everybody was looking forward to. Of course, in NBA circles, that is me being a college basketball fan, I did not care at all because Kansas Arizona was on at the same time. And speaking of college basketball, let's talk about it. Let's talk about the last week in college basketball. We're obviously going to get to Kansas Arizona at the, as the last game of this podcast. But without further ado, let's just get into that action in college basketball, starting with the only remaining unbeaten now after the week, number 23, Miami of Ohio. They beat Buffalo 73-71. That was a very, very close call for them. Almost ended the week with zero undefeateds. But they did win that game and they moved on to win later in the week. We'll talk about that in a second as well. But Minnesota beat number 10 Michigan State 76-73. A big win for the Golden Gophers, who really had been super close to winning a bunch of games this year, but just haven't been able to pull through at the very ends of those games. And finally, they did get one win. Meanwhile, for Michigan State, kind of continued their downward spiral, so to speak. I mean, it really hasn't been anything crazy, but given, the whole Jeremy Fear situations, he also got to take a flagrant in this. I don't know if they called it a flagrant or a technical, but one or the other in this game, a review situation due to him doing something that was deemed not a basketball play is the easiest way to explain it. But with all that going on, they just needed to eventually win a game, which, as we talked about in predictions, they beat Illinois. They eventually did do that, but needed to take the heat off of that for sure. Speaking of their opponent, Illinois earlier in the week beat Northwestern 84-44, just an absolute beatdown from the Illini. They have been playing some really, really high-level basketball recently. It takes a lot to beat this team right now. But team that hasn't been playing high-level basketball, really two teams that haven't been playing high-level basketball. Oklahoma State beat BYU 99-92. Oak State needed that win. They've been hovering around the bubble all year, but just don't have the quality wins that you need to get into the tournament. And this one will go a long way towards helping them out. They have good resume metrics. They have a good record. Everything looks right for them. They just don't have the quality wins, and metrics don't really like them because, frankly, since they haven't beaten many good teams, they don't have many games that really move the needle from a metric, from an advanced, statistics standpoint, from an efficiency margin standpoint. But then after that, Portland beat number 6 Gonzaga 87-70, or 87-80, excuse me. Gonzaga, they always lose one game in conference. They typically don't go undefeated. Normally it is St. Mary's, or maybe St. Mary's twice, or maybe San Francisco on the right year. This year Santa Clara looks like a contender to maybe beat them. I didn't think it would be Portland, I have to say. That is definitely not the team that I would have picked in the WCC. There are a few teams that look like they're capable of beating Gonzaga. St. Mary's played them close on the road when they played in Spokane already. Did not think Portland was going to be the team to beat them. But here we are. They did lose that game. Then you have number 20 Clemson. They beat Stanford 66-64 on the road. Obviously, a tough road trip to make all the way across the country, but they were able to deal with it just fine. Then you have Michigan, who just dominated Penn State 110-69. Just an ugly, ugly game. Yeah, I mean, pure domination by Michigan. Amari Burnett, 31 points in that game. He's obviously one of the keys to really How high can this Michigan team peak? We know what the big men are going to do. We know they're going to be some of the best players on the floor, if not the best players on the floor in any game Michigan plays. But the rest of the team, you know, the guard play, what are they going to get? If Burnett is that lethal as a shooter, this is a very, very scary team. But the team that Michigan leapfrogged to get to number two in the AP poll last week and stay there this week, of course, was UConn. UConn lost to St. John's, as we mentioned, in predictions, but of course, that game happened back on Friday. Other Friday action, number nine, Nebraska beat Rutgers 80-68. And then, you know, moving on to some important action on Saturday. Number 18, Virginia beat Syracuse 72-59. Number 21, Arkansas beat Mississippi State 88-68. Number 24, Louisville beat Wake Forest 88-80. Number 12, Purdue beat Oregon 68-64. I know I went rapid fire through those last few, but I want to pause at this one. Purdue, you know, this defense has been a problem all year long. That we always knew, and probably predicted that could have happened. But them scoring only 68 points against Oregon is just shocking, frankly. I mean, this is not a team that you should be struggling against. It's not a team that really anybody in the Big Ten should be struggling against. They were already going downhill. And also don't have their two best players. They don't have Jackson Schellstad or Nate Biddle right now due to injury issues. So really not a team you should be struggling against, especially at home. So Purdue will have to clean that one up a little bit going forward. Big game coming up soon against Nebraska, obviously later tonight. So if that game is any indication of where this Purdue team is at, I mean, frankly, if they're going to play like they did against Oregon, they're going to get killed on the road. But if they play like they have, you know, closer to their season norms overall, it'll be a close game. It'll be a fun one. Really could be a very high scoring back and forth game if both teams are clicking, but we'll just have to see if that's the case because both of those teams have kind of played some interesting games recently. Then you have number seven, Iowa State. They beat Baylor 72-69. A big win, of course, for Iowa State, even though that one was at home, Baylor has started to come on strong. I mean, I know they're not going to be a world beater in this conference. They're not going to win the conference. They're probably not even a Sweet 16 team. But they're a team that now looks like maybe they could kind of sneak their way into the NCAA tournament, and especially on a weak bubble that we have this year. And then, you know, they have the program continuity that they could easily win a game. And really, they might be favored in whatever game they get, depending on who they're playing against. It'll all be about matchups, but the reality is this team has the talent to be way higher up than they are in current projections. They just didn't start the year well at all. So, you know, you add the talent in there, they easily could be a team that wins a game or two in the tournament, although I would not put them as a Sweet 16 team, but definitely could be a round of 32 team. If they even make it in the first place, though, they're going to have to win a few of these games that they shouldn't to even make it there. And speaking of winning games that you shouldn't, Oklahoma, who was once a tournament team at some point this season, maybe, I guess, they beat number 15 Vanderbilt 92-91, a huge win on the road for the Sooners, not one that anybody expected them to get, and yet here we are. Obviously, they get that victory, and it's a big deal because the reality is, they need wins. I mean, I think they had lost nine straight heading into this game. So really, whoever the wins come against, they'll be happy with it. I don't think that this is a likely tournament team either way. I think at this point they're way far out of the picture. But who knows? Maybe they can claw their way back into it. Maybe this is some positive momentum for them to build off of going forward. Then you have number one Arizona, who saw Oklahoma State's win over BYU and decided to take Cowboys seriously. They beat them 84-47. Game was never close. Oklahoma State had nothing going on offense for, I mean, really 25 minutes in the middle of the game. But just in general, Arizona continuing their dominance over the inferior teams. Then you have North Carolina, who of course beat Duke, as we talked about in predictions. Michigan State, who beat Illinois, as we talked about in predictions. The rest of the Saturday action, number 20 Clemson beat Cal 77-55, a good win for Clemson to sweep that West Coast road trip, especially because Cal and Stanford are both decent teams this year. I mean, Cal is probably closer to the tournament picture, but Stanford also has some notable wins this year. So, the only team notably to beat St. Louis this year, which is kind of funny. But and came on a ridiculous buzzer beater. But look, both very both good enough teams. But for the rest of the action, you have number 17 Florida. They beat Texas A&M 86-67. Texas A&M was close to getting ranked. They were top the SEC heading in the last week. Just a crazy run to start the season, definitely defying expectations. The schedule is getting a little bit harder for them, so I don't expect them to really contend for the SEC title. I think that would be just putting way too much on that team's shoulders. But the reality is, they still have what it takes to be a tournament team, at least to win a game, and if not two, because they're a really tough and odd matchup. And I think that one of the things that, can make up for, a talent discrepancy or just not being, the better team in a matchup is just how odd do you play? What is your style? What can you do to upset another team, in terms of just how you mess up the game? And the way A&M presses, they mess up a ton of games, and there are a lot of teams who might be a little bit uncomfortable with that, come tournament time. So we'll see what happens with them. But for now, very, very happy with their season, or they should be very happy with their season, and should have a very positive outlook on how the rest of the season could unfold. Then you have the comeback kings of Kentucky. They beat Tennessee 74-71. Their second double-digit comeback against Tennessee this year. In that rivalry, they swept the season series. Very interesting that those two teams have played both of their games, and it's February 10th. I mean, that's not normal. I don't know why they're playing that rivalry so early. They probably should, save a few of those for later in the season, but it is what it is. Then Houston beat BYU, as we talked about in predictions. Michigan beat Ohio State 82-61 as the Wolverines continue to look like the November versions of themselves again, starting to really just put the hammer down on teams early and not let up later in the game, unlike they had kind of in the middle portion of the season. Maybe a sign of things to come going forward. Then you have number 13, Texas Tech. They beat West Virginia 70-63. Needed that win. Then you have number 17, St. John's, who beat Xavier 87-82 in overtime last night. A very, very close game, unexpectedly in the Patino clash, whatever you want to call that, the friendly family rivalry. Then, of course, the biggest game of the week, number 9, Kansas beat number 1, Arizona 82-78. So the Jayhawks take over, or not take over, but take Arizona off the ranks of the unbeatens, which leaves just Miami of Ohio now. And number 24, Louisville, finally, to end off the podcast, beat NC State 118-77. Two players in double figures, but Mykal Brown had 45 points in that game. So the Cardinals getting the big, big win in that one. So big win for Louisville, obviously a huge win for Kansas with no Darren Peterson, and yet still they were already in the top 10. They will be moving up even more after that victory. But that will wrap this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, February 17th, where we will once again check out my weekend predictions, review the NBA and college basketball. And that actually is probably it. So in the meantime, be sure to check out my picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursdays. My college hoops bracketology updates, which come out every Monday. And again, TBD on maybe being twice a week for the rest of the year. So far, not yet, but might make that change soon if I make it at all. But all of that on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, plus the number 24. Thank you for listening.